And welcome to the podcast of Do You Know the Mob? I'm our co-host, Sam Yulbrenn, and we have our co-host and special guest on the other side. Introduce yourselves, Brad and Angeline Jolie.
Well, that is one of the fanciest openings I've ever had to anything, Sam. This is, as everybody knows, Brandon Ellis, and right to my right,
Hannah Ellis.
Folks, we got a special guest today on our show.
Brandon just couldn't handle the trivia anymore. He was like, I got to have some help. So he went out and he recruited. He recruited as illegally as the Michigan Wolverines.
You know, I didn't pull a UT volunteer special with any McDonald's bags, but I had to get the heavy hitters.
Hannah, Brandon, before you guys were married, how often did you wash towels?
Wash towels together or wash towels like my own towels at my house and she was washing her towels at her house?
Yeah, before marriage, Hannah, how often were you washing your towels? Be honest.
Every 3 to 4 days.
Okay. And Brandon, I need you to be honest.
I don't know if I had like 4 bath towels. It was probably once every week and a half. I think I did laundry about every week and a half.
I was rocking 2 towels for a while when I first got out of college. It had no money to my name.
Well, yeah, Sam, I think we both fell upon hard times when we first got out of college.
The Great Depression came again.
It did.
How often, first off, when I was shopping for the registry for a wedding, I was like a comedy show. My fiance was taking me in. It was like, we got to put a duvet. And I'm like, what the heck is a duvet? And then she was like, we got to get a sham. Apparently that's a pillow. And I was like, this whole place is a sham. But so I learned a lot about home decor and what's supposed to be in a house. I mean, I don't know how I made it this far in life without a woman's touch, but.
I think The Bachelor is the ultimate minimalist, but at the same time is on to something. Just going to get society and what everybody tells them they need.
Well, let's just say I'm getting a duvet, probably one way or another, whether it's someone for the wedding or I'm gonna have to go buy it.
I don't even know what that is, Sam, but I don't want it in my house.
Hannah's probably rolling her eyes right now.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's get started with the trivia. So I'm going to give you guys a name and you have to tell me that famous person's stage name. So a lot of people don't know some of these.
I have them straight, Sam.
Yeah, well, some of these people, we don't realize that it's their stage name because we've been so used to it for so long. And I think Hannah might be able to help you on a few of these, but it's probably not the easiest, but we'll give it a shot. We'll give it a shot, okay? So The first person I'm going to say is Destiny Hope. Who is Destiny Hope that us Americans all know so well?
So it's a stage name, right? So it's like an artist.
Destiny Hope is not the stage name. Destiny Hope is the real name, which is kind of crazy because that sounds like a good stage name to me. But here's your hint. She's a singer. Oh, Beyonce. Good try. It's Miley Cyrus. Miley Cyrus.
Oh my gosh. I knew that.
Oh, she knew it.
This is not good.
No, you're right. Here's one I know Brandon could get. Theodore Geisel. I think is how you pronounce the last name. Theodore Geisel.
Oh, boy.
He is a famous author. Very famous. So famous, he might have been your first book. He's not a doctor. But if
Dr.
you were to be,
Seuss.
Ayo.
I think that's like, Gary Paulson?
Catherine Elizabeth Hudson. The first name is the key there. Catherine Elizabeth Hudson.
Did she write she was a writer, wasn't she?
No. We're talking singing, pop culture, let's see here, a teenage dream.
Katy Perry!
Boom! There it is.
Man,
these are tough. Oh, this one you could get. Really listen to this name. Shelton Lee. Shelton Lee. A famous director named Shelton Lee.
Oh.
Focus on the last name there. Shelton Lee, a famous director.
Superhero movies.
No, not quite. He's a New Yorker. He's African American. He's pretty famous in the movie scene.
Oh.
Shelton Lee. I know Hannah's thinking it. It's Spike Lee. Spike Lee.
Spike Lee. Oh, I would not have gotten that. Oh my gosh. This is rough, folks.
These are tough. Okay. Alicia Cook. Famous singer, Alicia Cook.
Alicia Keys?
Yes. Keys. Good job.
Oh, we got one.
Nice. These only get harder from here.
This is not a good sign.
Peter Gene Hernandez. Think about maybe his ethnicity with the last name. Peter Gene Hernandez. He's a singer. Very famous singer. Dance moves. He's short.
Bruno Mars?
Yes. Good job.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. Bruno Mars.
Who is Bruno Mars?
Let's see here. John Roger Stevens. He is, what do you call that when he won all four awards? An EGOT. He's an EGOT. Very famous for his music.
Is it John Legend?
Yep. Good job, Hannah. John Legend. let's see here. Oh, gosh. If I can even pronounce this one. Anoki Tanya Mirage. Which sounds close to her last name. Oniki.
Who was it?
Tanya Mirage. She's a famous singer. Probably not music you listen to, Brandon.
Tanya Mirage.
Yep. She is African American. And the last name sounds somewhat similar. It's Nicki Minaj.
I used to listen to Nicki Minaj.
That's what I get for assuming. okay, this person took their first name as their stage name, but his real name is Aubrey Graham. Aubrey Graham. He's from Toronto and he's a rapper. Aubrey Drake. Graham. Drake, yes. It's Aubrey Drake Graham. This lady is a very famous singer, Robin Fenty. She took her middle name, but Robin Fenty. She's African American. Say Umbrella, Ella.
Rihanna.
Rihanna, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fenty is her makeup brand.
Oh, really? Oh, there you go. Yeah, I had no idea. That. Hey, that's a fun fact. All right. I'll go a couple more. Alicia Beth Moore, but that does not help. Nope. So this girl is a famous singer, rock singer. Her stage name is a color. It's a color. Alicia Beth Moore. Breast cancer. Yes, there you go. I was gonna say breast cancer. Word is color. Thank you. I found it funny that her middle and last name were Beth Moore. But anyways.
Yeah.
Eric Marlon Bishop. He's a very famous actor, an African American actor. Brandon, he's in one of your favorite movies. It is Law Abiding Citizen.
Is it Morgan Freeman?
No.
It's not Morgan Freeman. It's
younger. He's older. Eric Marlon Bishop. He's funny. He's just a really good actor. It's Jamie Foxx. I know who you're
talking about.
Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
And then, there's just so many people you go with stage names. Karen Johnson. I think it's Karen Johnson with a C. She is a famous actress, movie director. She's on The View. Karen Johnson.
Do you know this one, Hannah?
The View. Her name is Whoopi Goldberg.
I was going to say that, but I wasn't
I'm sorry.
Sure.
I didn't give you
that. I had no idea.
Well, there's
I had no idea on most of these.
Yeah, that was a really tough one. I'm glad you had a second person.
All right, one more, Sam. We'll take one more.
Oh, goodness. Okay. One of the most famous historical actresses who may or may not have appeared in our podcast episodes before, Norma Jean Mortensen. Norma Jean Mortensen.
Marilyn Monroe.
Marilyn Monroe. Good job.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Arnold Lynn. Yeah. There you go.
All right. We had our special guest solely for the
trivia. Give her a round of applause. Give her a round of applause. There you go.
Well done.
Well, we'll get into our podcast. We'll dive in here.
Yeah, that was a little rough, Sam. I need something else after that.
Well, you know what? Right when you think things are rough, at least you're not a mobster who died as early as this guy.
Oh, my gosh.
So we are doing one of our older guys as far as back in time. He actually influenced one of our first, or not one of our first episode when we did John Dillinger. Crazy to think back that far, Brandon. But it is Dean O'Bannon. Dean O'Bannon.
Up in Chicago. Dean O'Bannon yet?
We have not. We've kept delaying him.
Oh, my gosh.
Dean O'Bannon, I found out his nickname, Brandon, it's Gimpy.
Wow. What a name.
Gimpy, because he had a short left leg. So I guess he walked with a gimp.
It must have been really short. He walked gimpy.
Enough to be noticeable, I guess, but didn't stop him from being in the crime scene. Dean O'Bannon was born on July 8th, 1892 in Maroua, Illinois. In 1901, Dean's mother died from I always have trouble pronouncing this, Brandon. Tuberculosis.
That's tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis. TB. We'll go with that. And his dad relocated him and his sons and him to Chicago. His father was a painter by trade and raised his sons in an area called Kibobin, which is known as Little Hell. I can't see why we're talking about this guy on Do You Know the Mob. I just can't figure
this,
it out.
This seemed like, really set up for success here.
Little Hell was named that because of its high crime and unemployment rates. Brandon, I probably should have had you research Little Hell, but maybe next time. But it sounds kind of like, what's that one in New York? Hell's Kitchen? Something like that.
Yeah,
but
it does. It does.
Mm-hmm. So Dean attended the Holy Name Parochial School and served as an altar boy at the Catholic Holy Name Cathedral. Brandon, were you ever the altar boy at your Baptist church?
I was not, but I was a choir boy.
That's right, he was. That's right.
Were you a choir boy, Sam?
Oh, if I was a choir boy, let's just say that we wouldn't have had any attendance in church.
Well, I had the mic really far away from me.
You got to know, you got to stay in your lane. Dean O'Bannon was a member of the Little Hell Gang. That makes sense within the area he lived in. This was a youth branch of the Market Streeters or Market Street Gang. Brandon, tell us about Dean O'Bannon coming from the Market Street Gang.
Yes, sir. So the Market Street Gang was one of many street gangs in Chicago at the turn of the 20th century. There's a lot of these little gangs running around and not as big as what they came to be in, affiliation or control, but there's much small ones. So This gang was made up of pickpockets, thieves, and labor sluggers working the 42nd and 43rd wards. And what they're kind of known for, Sam, is they played a significant role in the circulation war between the newspapers Chicago Evening American, Chicago Tribune, and Chicago Daily News. These newspapers were vying for control over circulation, stuff like that, which we may get into more in a minute. But Dean O'Bannon, like you said, was a member of the Market Street Gang, and he developed contacts with politicians and journalists that he would use later on. The Market Street Gang eventually developed into the North Side Gang, which I'm sure we will talk about in a second.
So he also met in this gang people we have done already, Earl Jaime Weiss, Vincent the Schemer Drewski, George Bugs Moran. Oh, these nicknames are great. The Schemer and Bugs.
it was interesting too, Sam, researching it and just seeing, you know, like the culmination story, what the origin story. We'll use a fancy hero term, but the origin story of all these people kind of getting to know each other, honing their skills, getting coached, if I can use that word, from other
the
older monsters.
The origin story for the villains.
Yes.
So throughout his life, Dean always displayed a wild sense of humor. In his days as a little hell gangster, this is so funny, he enjoyed riding on the back bumper of the streetcars, of course. I don't see the difference between this and Brandon growing up in Oklahoma.
They're pretty similar, honestly. I mean, his was a streetcar, mine was a wagon.
On one occasion, a car he was sitting in suddenly stalled and then rolled backwards. Dean was thrown to the ground and the car ran over him.
Oh.
And yeah. In the hospital, doctors were convinced that the unconscious boy would die, but he survived. And this is where, as you can imagine, Brandon, his left leg was an inch shorter. So he walked with a limp for the rest of his life.
Oh my gosh, that's how it happened?
Yep, I know. Very surprising when you're hanging off the edge of a car that's going.
I can't see how that would go wrong.
That's the same thing you probably were on the Oregon Trail, right? It was like,
you know, I have stood up in the back of a moving vehicle before and suffered the consequences.
Don't do drugs, kids, and don't ride on cars.
Yes. Seatbelts.
In 1909, O'Bannon was arrested by a night watchman. He was caught stealing postage stamps from a drugstore. This resulted in his first criminal conviction, and he served a 3-month sentence in a house of correction. He then served four prison. Sorry, what?
That's a long time for just some stamps.
Hey, you know, you don't mess with the government. Don't mess with the government. federal government. There were some guys in my town growing up. They like blew up some mailboxes, and that was like a federal crime because the mailbox was like federal property. So,
yeah.
Anyways, I don't know if the postage is quite the same thing, but I wouldn't be surprised. So,
I know it's a big no-no.
Trying to set him straight. I obviously didn't work, but
sounds like it.
He then served a short prison sentence in 1911 for assault with a blackjack as his choice of weapon. He was also caught with possession of deadly weapons. This was the last prison sentence, Brandon, he would ever receive.
Ooh. Good. He went straight. That's what that tells me.
Exactly. And end of the episode. In 1920, Dean started a bootlegging operation. Oh, that's a surprise in Chicago during Prohibition. he made arrangements for beer suppliers in Canada to start shipments immediately and also struck deals with whiskey and gin distributors. In 1921, Dean married 18-year-old Viola Kenneth. According to his wife, he was also a loyal and caring husband who never left home without telling her where he was going. I'll believe it maybe, but hey, honey, just going off to, you know, sell some alcohol, sell some liquor. Hey, babe, just going soon. Off to cut someone's fingers off.
I'll be back soon, honey. Don't worry.
What is it they say in the movie Princess Bride? Have fun storming the castle.
Sounds about right.
According to his, he also made the effort to get a legitimate job, possibly so that his criminal operations didn't seem so noticeable. He brought half a share. he had a passion, Brandon. He had a passion. It was flower arranging.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He worked long hours.
Everybody's got a passion, Sam.
You know, don't judge, right?
You can't be all work.
You got to have an outlet. You know, I'm sure being a mobster was stressful at times.
Mm.
So he would work long hours in the flower shop and often brought a bouquet home to his wife. This sounds just like Brandon, undercover, bringing flowers back, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
O'Bannon pioneered Chicago's first liquor hijacking in 1921. He spotted a truck on the whiskey delivery route. The truck halted at a stop sign, and O'Bannon drew his gun and jumped into the cab, pushing the driver out. He drove the truck to Morton's garage and made a few phone calls. within 20 minutes, the whiskey was all sold. That's nice. A quick business right there. when a profit's to be made.
That's impressive.
Mm-hmm. So the O'Bannon mob, known as the Northside Gang, now ruled the North Side and the Gold Coast. Brandon, can you tell our folks what the Gold Coast was in Chicago?
Yes, Sam. So the Gold Coast was a neighborhood that grew in the wake of the Great Chicago Fire. In 1882, millionaire Potter Palmer moved to the area. He filled a swampy area and built the Palmer Mansion, a 42-room castle-like home. Other wealthy Chicagoans followed Potter into the neighborhood, which became one of the richest in Chicago. And for some context, Sam, it's nestled close to the Lake Michigan shoreline, just kind of north of the downtown area. Mm-hmm. And it has unique 19th century homes, which aided in becoming part of the National Register of Historic Places in 1978. And just to give some context on the wealthiness of this neighborhood, in 2011, the Gold Coast ranked as the 7th richest urban neighborhood in the United States with a median household income of $153,000.
Jeez, so peace.
So it's still rich.
Yeah. So O'Bannon's name grew during this time in the underworld, and he attracted more followers, of course. The biggest booze supplier at the time was Johnny Torrio, the Fox, Brandon the Fox.
Johnny Torrio, our boy.
We've got a lot of boys, maybe.
Not good.
They had taken over Big Jim Colissimo's outfit. I love that his nickname is Big Jim. He set up the new Chicago Crime Syndicate, a partnership between the main gang leaders in Chicago. Torrio and his lieutenant Al Capone met with O'Bannon and Weiss to discuss the robberies. This is pretty interesting because it's like as if they started out civil, one could say. Mm-hmm. Torrio asked O'Bannon to join the crime syndicate, which meant that Dean and the other syndicate members would have to respect each other's territories and properties. As a leader of the syndicate, Johnny Torrio received a portion of the profits from the other gangs, but in order to keep the peace, he was willing to make an exception in the case of the Northsiders. Dean O'Bannon agreed to join and to consolidate their new partnership. The two sides exchanged shares in each other's businesses. Torrio got shares in some of O'Bannon's breweries, including 50% of the brewery. In return, O'Bannon was brought in on some distilleries and gambling dens belonging to Torrio's outfit. This sounds like a mobster monopoly.
It does. I like it, though. You know,
collusion.
Little, you don't come here, I don't come there. We share a little bit and we're good to go.
We share the profits, you know, make the stakeholders happy.
Oh, yeah.
Beginning 1924 was the start of the process which led to O'Bannon and Torrio's truce becoming extinguished. Of course, we saw this coming. O'Bannon, yeah, enough said there, right? O'Bannon moved against his South Side rivals by unsuccessfully trying to frame Torrio and Capone for the murder of John Duffy. Finally, later that year, O'Bannon learned that the police were planning to raid his brewery. A place O'Bannon and Torrio held large stakes within. Before the raid, Dean O'Bannon approached Johnny Torrio and told him he wanted to sell his share in the brewery, claiming that the Genias had scared him and wanted to leave the rackets. Obviously, this wasn't the case. Torrio agreed to buy O'Bannon's share and gave him $500,000. Wow, that is nothing to sneeze at.
That is a good deal.
There's some profit going on there. On the night of O'Bannon's last shipment, the police swept into the brewery. O'Bannon, Torrio, many Southside gangsters were all arrested. O'Bannon got off easy because, unlike Johnny Torrio, he had no previous prohibition-related arrest. That's helpful. Torrio had to bail out himself and six other associates, and later the court charges with the possibility of jail time. Dean O'Bannon also refused to return the money from the deal, of course. So, Torrio realized he had been double-crossed. He lost the brewery, $500,000 in cash, had been indicted and humiliated. Worst of all, humiliated, right, Brandon?
Worst of all.
Mm-hmm. This was the final straw, the nail in the coffin, as they say. Johnny Torrio agreed to the Genia's demand to kill Dean O'Bannon. In 1924, Dean sat in with Al Capone and other notorious bosses to tally the week's profits. It was mentioned that Angelo Genia had dropped a large amount of cash. Capone recommended that they cancel the marker as a professional courtesy. Mm. O'Bannon instead got on the telephone and demanded that he get his that the debt was paid. This is a personal insult to Angelo Genia, and his family could not be restrained.
Oh.
So Dean signed his own death warrant, basically. Frankie Yale and other gangsters visited O'Bannon's flower shop to discuss floral arrangements, of course. That's what happened. However, the real purpose, as you can imagine, Brandon, was to get the store layout for the hit they were going to have on Dean. November 9th, he got a special order by telephone for a custom wreath to be picked up the following morning. On the morning of November 10th, 1924, Dean O'Bannon was clipping some flowers in the back room. Unfortunately, his bodyguard was hung over and did not make it to the flower shop that morning. That's just not a good, that's not a good bodyguard there.
No.
You gotta pay better than that, I guess. Frankie Yale entered the shop with Johnny Torrio and Al Capone's guns, or gunsmen, because, of course, you don't want to get your hands dirty, Brandon. They were greeted as, "Hello, boys." And then the man in the middle nodded and returned O'Bannon's handshake with a death grip. And then the other two fired bullets into O'Bannon's chest. Two in the cheeks and two in his throat. Dean O'Bannon's killing was a spark to the brutal five-war gang war, Brandon, that we've talked about, the North Side versus the Chicago Outfit, which would ultimately lead to the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which was another eventful situation.
We'll leave it. Yeah.
So it was told that when Dean O'Bannon's death word came to Jaime Weiss, he crumbled to the floor of his bathroom sobbing uncontrollably. He had lost his best friend, boss, and mentor. I think Dean O'Bannon was a mentor to many people because we talked about him teaching Dillinger and Pierpont. So,
hey, like I said, origin story.
That's right. That's right. So, quite a story for a guy that I think he lived, if I recall, like 33 years old or something.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Chicago. We can't get away from New York City and Chicago. You know, it just keeps coming back. There's enough crime there to talk about. I'm starting to learn with their help from Spy Guy that every city's got some mobster crime history one way or another. You know, we've done Tampa and Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Indianapolis, you name it. Phoenix City, Alabama.
We've bounced around a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, folks, thanks for listening to our podcast of Do You Know the Mob? I'm your co-host, Samuel Brennan.
And this is Brandon Ellis.
Signing off.